Welcome in, everybody, to week 16 of the PFF Betting Preview Show. I'm here, as always, with Judah Forkang. Judah, how's it going, man?
It's going well. Grinding through the season. Another solid weekend last weekend for us. Ready to keep rolling. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Just riding that Bucks call you had last week into this week. And we got some Saturday football. That's that week after college football ends, and you start to get some Saturday NFL games. Even better this week because you got all the playoff games on top of it. So got to get some dual screen action going on with some college and NFL. But I'm looking forward to it. Always a good time of the year. And we're going to start off with the game tonight. We're recording Thursday morning. Thursday night football, it's a good one. It's got some playoff implications. Broncos at Chargers. Chargers are 2.5-point favorites. 41.5-point total. That total's moved down a little bit over the course of the week. And honestly, I think when I was looking through this game, I still like the under at 41.5. These are two defenses who, when they've played non-elite offenses, have looked good this year, have performed well, and I don't think either of these offenses in their current state qualify as elite. And we've seen this year, Bo Nix, his passing numbers take a hit when you get more too high looks, and that's kind of how the Chargers want to live. They're third in the NFL in terms of percentage of plays with too high safeties, behind only the Vikings and the Chiefs. And you kind of saw that in the first matchup this season. I know Nix has taken a step forward over the back half of the year, but they played back in week 6, and the score doesn't necessarily tell the story. The Chargers were winning that game 23-0 through three quarters, and then the Broncos were able to pile up some garbage time yards and points, and the game ended 23-16. But they were really struggling to get anything going early in that game. And I think you could see a similar situation this week where I talked about those splits for Nix against single high, 76.5 passing grade, 7 yards per attempt. Against two high, 58.9 passing grade, 5.4 yards per attempt. And you know you're going to see a lot of that from the Chargers this week. They do have some injuries on the back end. Cam Hart is out. Elijah Molden is doubtful. So they're a little bit weaker there, but Christian Fulton's still there, Tarheeb Still's still there, Derwin James. So I still think they have enough to kind of keep that Broncos passing attack down, but I'm interested what you think.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably right. If I had any angle, I think it would be the Broncos passing offense. Because on the other side of the ball, I think the Chargers are a completely different team with, well, two main things. Number one, like, they have absolutely zero run game.
It's bad. It's bad. Watching Gus Edwards try to run the ball is not good.
It's bad. And also Herbert has, like, completely lost his mobility. That was really working kind of in those middle chunk of the season, like week 7 to 13, or I guess week 7 to 14. And it's you just become much more limited, right? Like, you really need to win in those straight dropbacks, and that's an area where Denver's been good, and I think they match up decently well against the Chargers. With, I mean, I don't know how much Sertan's going to travel to the slot. I assume he's in. Also, that is,
yeah, it looks like Sertan is in. Riley Moss, it looks like, is going to be out. He got ruled out, so he is out.
Yeah. So I would be curious if Sertan goes to the slot a bit more to follow with McConkey. That's obviously, like, not something we can know, and usually Moss has been there. But especially if Sertan's on McConkey, the Chargers don't, I mean, like, you've got Josh Palmer on those deep balls, I guess. That can kind of serve as a man beater, but, like, McConkey's their guy, and Sertan has been incredible in man coverage. Especially if that's the matchup, I think the Chargers are going to struggle. Look, it just seems like the type of kind of slogfest. And I think that what Denver does have, especially as they've kind of like utilized a bit more of Marvin Mims, is that sort of deep passing game like they had against like that everyone saw against Cleveland. And they're also just a very high passing volume team, right? They're passing, especially over the last month or so, they're like fourth in pass rate over expectation. Like, they're going to throw a lot. And the Chargers run defense has been like good against teams of the Broncos caliber. They've obviously gotten beaten by better run games, but they're not just going, they're not Swiss cheese, even though they're designed to have very few players in the box and kind of have their safeties deep. Yeah, it's not such a intriguing tails game for me. I'm with you here on the under. If I had to play something, I think it's just betting on the volume of Knicks, and they have a lot of explosive players, even if the Chargers are going to try and take that away.
Yeah, I think the one area on Denver's offense that I am looking at a little bit is the running back receiving, specifically Javonte Williams. The Chargers are third in running back targets allowed. It's an area they typically funnel targets to, and it should be more concentrated for Denver this week. Jaleel McLaughlin's out. He was their primary receiving back. Oderick Estime only has 26 routes run this year. So, and just profiling wise, he doesn't profile as a guy who they're going to use in the pass game. So I think Javonte Williams is going to get that work. His receiving line's 13.5 yards. Like, that's, I can see him getting 2-3 catches and going over that this week. But there's not a ton of reason to be interested in either of these offenses, I don't think. On the Chargers side, talked about Riley Moss being out. We talked about it last week. Like, looking at this defense, the Browns game, they played Levi Wallace. Levi Wallace got absolutely torched. They made a change last week to Chris Abrams-Drain, who did play much better at that other outside cornerback spot. Fifth-round rookie. He allowed one catch on 6 targets, had 2 forced incompletions. So I think in theory that's an upgrade. And I don't think Surtain travels with McConkie to the slot. We haven't really seen that much from Surtain in his career this season. So like, that is the one area on the Chargers offense where McConkie's dominated man coverage this season, regardless of matchup. He should get McMillan in the slot or others. He should avoid Surtain. And like, that's the one area I have some interest in this offense. When I was looking up the man coverage splits for the Chargers receivers, just a side note, Quentin Johnston's stat line is hilariously bad. He has 22 targets against man this year, 5 catches for 27 yards. That is unthinkably bad. It's basically McConkie only. Like, he's the only guy who this Broncos defense really should be worried about. And like, the lines are so low for Gus Edwards and Kamani Vidal that you're like, should I take a chance? And after thinking about it, I'm not. I'm staying away. This Broncos run defense has been good. The Chargers running offense has been inefficient, specifically without J.K. Dobbins. I think the one area that you do get some value is Gus Edwards is +900 first touchdown on FanDuel. He's +180 anytime touchdown on FanDuel. He has a very defined goal line role. So, like, if you want to take a shot on that, I don't hate that. But in general, I think this game, there's not a lot to be excited about in terms of offensive production. So I'll be on the under. I kind of like pairing Bo Nix's under with Williams over receiving to get some of that inverse. McConkie overs. But in general, I'm not going to be betting heavily on this game.
Yeah, I like those angles. Don't have not a game of crazy tails, I don't think.
We'll move over to a game Saturday that might have some tails. At least I hope there's some tails, because I'm going to be betting on some tails. And that is Texans at Chiefs. This line opened up under 3 because there was questions about Mahomes and his status. It's moved out to 3.5, the Chiefs' favorites, since it seems like Mahomes got a full practice in on Wednesday. It seems like he's going to play. Any time that there is the word high ankle sprain in the injury designation. I don't care if you put the word mild in front of it. I get concerned. And I think that he's going, like, his mobility is going to be limited in this game. He's going to play. He's not going to be the same type of creator, in my opinion, that he's been throughout his career this season, and that he has to be, honestly, in this offense. He has more dropbacks where he's charted as moved off his spot than any other quarterback in the league. And a lot of this offense is him buying time to find receivers. Like, I think Andy Reid gets this kind of designation as one of the best offensive play callers in the NFL, and he's earned it. Like, I don't think that's the case this year. Like, when you're looking at this offense, it's like, what is their identity? Their identity is basically just Mahomes making something out of nothing. The receiving core isn't great. They might get Hollywood Brown back this week, which in theory gives it a lift. But, like, that the Mahomes injury paired with the matchup against this Texans defense, the Texans have one of the best edge rusher duos in the NFL, and Jonathan Greenard and Danielle Hunter. The Chiefs' tackles have been an issue all season. They brought in DJ Humphreys to try to fix that. He got hurt. He was out last week. He started out the week not practicing this week. Don't know if he's going to be able to go. Last week, they turned to Joe Tooney and kicked him out the left tackle instead of going back to Wanya Morris. And Tooney's great guard, right? He's a guy who, like, I believe he's played tackle in spot starts in the past. But he got the pleasure of going up against Myles Garrett last week. And Myles Garrett led the NFL in pressures with 12. And obviously, Myles Garrett, great player. Tooney's playing out of position. But it's a similar situation this week with these edge rushers from Houston. And if Mahomes' mobility is limited, like, I'm worried about the Chiefs' offense in this game as 3.5-point favorites against a competent Texans team.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And look, I'm not a doctor, and I don't like to kind of prognosticate on injuries. But what I do think is interesting, and maybe it's just noise, is kind of looking at when a specific injury occurred, and then, like, was there any kind of noticeable change in the data? Patrick Mahomes, since he got hurt, I think, against Tampa Bay, his pressure to sack rate has doubled. It was, like, sitting around, like, 10%, which is, like, his usual top of the league. And it's been, since that injury, like, 20% or that game. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe I'm just, like, anchoring to one game. But he has not been able to avoid sacks. And, like, we have a 5-year history of Mahomes being one of the greatest sack avoiders of all time. Like, it is striking that basically from that point on, he's been well below league average. It's like bottom 25th percentile in his pressure to sack rate and in his sack avoidance generally. And I think it, like, has a lot to do with his mobility and playing on an ankle. Like, that's not going to be helped here, right? Like, you don't just if anything, I think it's going to get worse, and then you're going to have a completely different offense. And to your point, the Houston defense has been incredible, right? Like, this is a team that has been generating a lot of pressure. I think, as you were talking about with the edges, it also does not match up. They match up extremely well with Kansas City. It's not a good matchup for Kansas City. And like, they're also, they've been stopping the run very well. And the Chiefs, I think, have built the reputation of, they're not the same defense as last year. They're not as good. We've talked about how vulnerable their pass defense is. But, like, they have this great success rate. And through the first 10 weeks of the season, they were number one in success rate. They were running the ball extremely effectively with Kareem Hunt. That has not been the case over the last 6 weeks of a team that is, like, 12th in success rate and like, middle of the pack in these efficiency metrics. I'm like, this is not to say that by playoff time they can't or won't kind of find their way as they usually do. But for the current team right now, given Mahomes' injury, they're not that good of an offense. And I think, like, not just are they not that good, they're playing at, like, a league average rate. And then one of your best traits is, like, your quarterback's ability, as you said, to create like that is the offense right now. And I'm with you. I don't think he's going to be able to do that to the same extent. And it's just a different level, I think, now than come playoff time, where I think you're really leaving it all out there, and like you can't do that at this point. On the other side of the ball, I'm torn because the problem right now for Houston is their offensive line, especially on the interior. And like they kind of fixed it for a bit, and then Drew Strokes got hurt. And they've got some real problems there, and like that's not great when you're going up against Chris Jones, and like that matchup itself can really nuke the entirety of the offensive production. But getting past that, as we said, this is a Chiefs defense which has been extremely vulnerable, and basically last week in the rain was like their first good game since week 7. And I think like I'm not ready to completely write off the Texans as a bad offense. I'm not going to like jump to say like, oh, we should ignore what's happened this season and look to last year as signal. But I think we should have a stronger prior on like their ability to turn it around, especially with Nico Collins back. I think this is a spot where they can have success because everyone's been having success against the Chiefs defense. And I also think that where the Chiefs are weak, especially like covering slot receivers, and they'll be able to move Nico Collins around the formation to have him avoid Nick Duffy, and like you've just got a huge mismatch there. And another angle I like is Mechie has been like basically that he's earned that wide receiver 3 role, which before was kind of rotating with like Robert Woods was getting some work, Xavier Hutchinson was getting some work. Like he's firmly now in that wide receiver 3 role. He's also going to see plenty of slot work, obviously, and he's going to have a great matchup against Kansas City. His props are also extremely low. I think that's an intriguing alt. He's been getting plenty of not only routes, but his utilization and target share is also way up. That's a spot I'll be looking to if building through the Houston passing game. But I think this is really mostly a kind of fate of the Kansas City offense, and I would not be shocked if this game plays to an under as well.
Yeah, and Mechie, they just missed. He just missed on a deep target last week. Right, it was close. So he's getting some of those downfield looks as well. I'm going to be on the Houston passing game. Right, Stroud hasn't cleared 300 passing yards in a game since week 5, that game against the Bills. But like, I think he has a chance this week. If you look in the last 5 weeks, they've been up first or second in the NFL in pass rate over expected. Like they've been passing the ball a ton. So I think there's a good chance with Mixon beat up a little bit that continues to happen against the Chiefs defense that has defended the run well and struggled against the pass since Jalen Watson went down. We've talked about that a lot. And McDuffie is a great cornerback, one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. He's not doing the Legarius need shadow wide receiver ones thing. Like, so Nico Collins is going to get opportunities against these other cornerbacks and against the defense that, yes, they play a lot of too high. They also play a lot of man. Like, Collins has been good against both. He's one of those elite tier wide receivers where the matchup doesn't really matter. And if Stroud's having a big game, there is a very, very high chance that Collins is also having a big game. So I'm going to be on some of that. I've attacked tight ends against the Chiefs this year. So Dalton Schultz is another guy kind of in line with Mechie where he's going to be in the slot. He's going to be in line. The Chiefs have allowed more receiving yards to tight ends than any other defense in the NFL this year. And Schultz's prop is around 30 yards, right? So it's not a lot has to happen for that to hit. So I'll be on some SGPs around Stroud in the passing game for Houston. I do agree that the Chris Jones thing is an issue, but the Texans did move Titus Howard to left guard last week. And look, Howard's probably better at tackle. We've seen him at guard before. It's not been as good, but it is significantly better than what we saw early in the season with Kenyon Green at left guard. So it weakens right tackle. They brought in Blake Fisher. That's a downgrade from Titus Howard. And we've seen the Chiefs move Chris Jones out to the edge situationally to attack those matchups. So maybe that happens. But I think on the interior, like if it's what we saw last week and Titus Howard's playing there, I'm not I'm not as concerned as I would have been if they just threw Kenyon Green back into the lineup. So I think that combination of concerns about the Chiefs offense with Mahomes being potentially limited, taking more sacks. I bet Myles Garrett over 0.25 sacks last week. It was like -110. I like the matchup. Didn't come through. Like I said, he had 12 pressures but no sacks. I'm going to be going back to the well with Hunter and Anderson this week. When I looked this morning, both of them were around -110. So I think there's a good chance that one or both of those guys get home for a sack in this game. But I like Houston +3.5. I like Houston money line. I like SGPs around Stroud to Nico to Schultz, like your Mechie call and in the sack props.
Yeah. I'd also just add one more. I like all those, and I'm going to be on the same side. CJ Stroud, among the quarterbacks with 100 dropbacks that we have charted, has the second best. It's actually really, if you want to, like, Andy Dalton's number one in deep accuracy in a smaller sample. Sorry, among quarterbacks with 200 dropbacks, CJ Stroud leads our charting in deep accuracy, which is obviously the area where he's had a ton of success. But his like EPA on deep balls is among the very worst in the NFL. Usually, like, your deep success is very much a function of your wide receivers, and is less so a quarterback stat. But that's why we chart things like accuracy, which is going to, it's not going to fully separate these things, but it does a decent job of it. Like, that's going to regress. And as I feel like we keep talking about, you know, oh, Tank Dell just missed on this deep ball. And as he said, like, Mechie just missed on this deep ball. Like, these are things which over the course of a season are probably not going to sustain itself in the same way that, like, Houston had a ton of success last year on the deep ball. And that also probably wasn't sustainable, but it's like two kind of extremes that I don't think that, like, CJ Stroud all of a sudden got worse throwing deep, which is where so much of their success came last year. They were so, so explosive. Like, the pieces are all there, especially with Nico Collins back. That is, I guess, another you know, data point in favor of, like, this Houston offense can still put up a lot of passing yards. They, as you said, they still are, they're passing at an extreme high rate. This, like, oh, Bobby Slowick refuses to throw the ball on early downs narrative is just simply not true. Like, yes, their 2nd and 10 run rate is a little high, but, like, they're throwing plenty on early downs. And I think that Stroud, it's a matter of time, I guess, is the way of putting it, until some of these deep shots start connecting and we see some huge passing yardage games.
This week, manifest it.
That's right. CJ Stroud SGPs, I'm in.
So you wanted to talk about a game featuring Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I tried to talk you out of it, but here we are. Browns at Bengals. Bengals are 7.5-point favorites, 46.5-point total. What do you like here?
Yeah, I maybe should put you on the spot with a guess here. Okay, among the quarterbacks with 100 dropbacks in our database since 2019, who's the only quarterback with a worse EPA per play than Dorian Thompson-Robinson? It's a real toughie. It's a real tough one.
That is a tough one.
I'll give you the answer.
It can't be Tommy DeVito because he's had too many good games. Yeah, just give me the answer.
It's Ryan Finley. Oh,
damn. Bengals.
Right. A deep pull there. Dorian Thompson-Robinson has the second worst. He's losing nearly 0.4 points per play. He's been a disaster. And if you look at the surroundings from when most of that sample was, like, they had some semblance of a run game. The offensive line for the Browns was better. The offensive line's a disaster right now. Their skill, I mean, Jerry Judy's having this kind of breakout season with Winston, but there's nothing really behind him. This is an offense that has really, really struggled, and I think will continue to struggle. And, like, a lot of the kind of market value is in, like, Cincinnati's defense is atrocious, but I'm not sure that Dorian Thompson-Robinson is going to be able to kind of take advantage of that. He's been horrific, even in the small samples that we have this year, he's also been terrible in the same situations. Not that I'm putting that much stock into that. He came in, in the game Watson got hurt. Right, they had to bench him to get to Winston. But on the other side of the ball also. The Cleveland defense has been just bleeding explosive plays. They're dead last in the NFL in that. And the defense to start the season was generating a ton of quick pressure. They were leading the NFL. Like, this is what happens when you have Myles Garrett. Since they traded Za'Darius Smith and replaced him with he was last week. I need to double check the worst graded edge rusher we have. I'm lost. I'm always going to mispronounce his name, but Ogbo Okonkwo, I think.
Okonkwo.
Maybe
I think.
It's confusing with Chig Okonkwo. But he is 115th out of 116th of our edge players, and the gap there has led to a Cleveland team which is now, like, since Smith was traded, they're generating the they're 24th in quick pressure read. This is not the same unit. They play a ton of single high. They just do not have the personnel to match up with Chase and Higgins, and just kind of rely on their cornerbacks to win their one-on-one matchups without safety help. This is a spot where I think it's Cincinnati onslaughts. Cincinnati's going to pass a ton. We know that. And I think this is a spot where they're going to see a lot of volume because Darren Thompson Robinson is really bad. And you're just going to see a lot of, like, kind of the early, like, Watson style of just tons of three and outs. The Cleveland's had no run game to speak of, obviously. Now Nick Chubb's out. Jerome Ford broke that great run last year, but but this has been an offense that's been bad. I do not think they're going to be able to move the ball against anyone, quite frankly, even this bad Cincinnati defense. And then Cincinnati just matches it up so well with the Browns, especially when they can get these single high looks, which Cleveland's going to give them. I like Higgins. I like Chase. I like Burrow. They're still technically in playoff contention. They're going to be playing at 100%. Maybe Joe Burrow's going to have some words for Zach Taylor. But I think this is a spot for Cincinnati onslaughts, and I can see them completely blowing the doors off the Browns.
Yeah, I can see that too. And we don't have a big sample on Thompson Robinson this year. He did have 100-plus dropbacks last year. But the one game he did play a significant amount was against the Bengals. In that game, he came in for Watson. And 33.0 passing grade, 11 for 24, 82 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 picks. So I'm with you, right? This Bengals defense is bad. He's not a guy who can take advantage of that, right? I think if you're making the change to Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the idea has to be that you want to run the ball more and use him as part of that, right? Because he does have some mobility. We saw that a little bit in the Bengals game, which he came in. He had 44 rushing yards. Didn't see it a ton last year, but he does add some mobility. And there's really no reason, if you're just looking at the body of work, to bench Winston for him, unless that's what you're doing, / you're tanking for a better pick in the draft. So I agree there. I am a little bit concerned about the volume for the Cincinnati offense, and it might just be, look, I know they pass the ball more than just about any team when looking at neutral situations, and they're still going to pass the ball when they're ahead. It might just be me being scared because I bet Burrow over 268.5 yards last week, and he had like 215 in the first half, and then it was a sweat to the final drive to get there. So, like, if this is a situation where they're up 3 touchdowns at halftime, like, and Thompson Robinson is throwing pick sixes like Will Levis was, like, I do get a little bit concerned about the super high end alts. When you're looking at Burrow, Chase, Higgins, when their lines are already so high. But yeah, I don't disagree at all that this is a great spot for Cincinnati, and they should cover the 7.5, right? I like that for sure. One note on the Browns and how they played the Bengals. The Browns are a super high man coverage team. They have been since Jim Schwartz got there. 35% man coverage against non-Cincinnati defenses this year. It's second to Detroit. When they played the Bengals, their cover one rate, or that was just cover one rate. When they played the Bengals, their cover one rate was 9%. So they bumped that way down. They played a ton of cover three, 47% cover three. So you're still getting a lot of single high, but you did see less man coverage. And there are some interesting like cover one versus cover three splits for the Bengals receivers. Higgins and Gesicki have actually been more productive on a per route basis in terms of yards per out run against man coverage than Chase has. But Chase has been eating against zone and cover three. Right? He's up over 3.2 yards per out run against cover three this year. So, like, it's a good spot for all of them. I think I actually might like Mike Gesicki at his line the best. But, yeah, good spot for all of these guys, and the Bengals should roll.
Since he onslaughts in those SGPs, since he maybe on the alt lines as well. That's what I'll be on.
I had a thought. I don't know if it's stupid. It might be stupid. But pairing some of these Cincy spreads and potentially Cincy alts with forward over 49.5 rushing, like if the Browns are like really committed to the run and they're not putting the ball in Dorian Thompson's Robinson's hands a lot, like this is a bad Bengals run defense. Their third lowest in explosive run rate allowed over the last couple weeks. Like, Ford broke a big run last week against the Chiefs. Like, I could see that happening on some of the zone read stuff, especially where you have some different elements that the defense has to pay attention to. So that's another inverse correlation type play that I don't hate.
Love that. I love that. It's not a matter of hate. You can get there on volume alone.
Yeah.
Even Dorian Thompson Robinson scrambling also, getting those rush yards. Even both of those, I think, are interesting builds.
We'll move on to a game with a little bit more importance in the playoff picture. Eagles at Commanders. Eagles are 3.5-point favorites on the road, 45.5-point total. And the Eagles proved something to me last week, man. I thought Pittsburgh, just with the way they play and their defense, would be able to keep it close. And the Eagles rolled them in the first half. They basically didn't let them touch the ball in the second half. Right? Multiple people tweeted out, like, the Steelers had 11 plays in the second half, which is, like, the lowest, second lowest since 2000 or something like that. The Eagles were just able to get 10-minute drives, chew out the clock, built an early lead by passing the ball primarily. Right? They were able to take advantage of all the man coverage that the Steelers played. Steelers' pass rush really wasn't able to impact Hurts a ton. They did get some sacks. They got a forced fumble. But, like, in general, the Eagles' passing offense won. Right, so I was impressed from that by Philadelphia. Right, and if that's something that they have, specifically in those matchups against teams that want to go man-heavy, the run game's great. Defense is great. Like, this is a difficult team to beat. And the Commanders, they're coming off two wins, but they had that stretch from weeks 8 to 12 where everyone's talking about the Cliff Kingsbury offense falling off in the second half of the year, and the offense didn't look nearly as good as it did early in the season. They've rebounded against the Titans and the Saints. I really don't know how much to take from that. Both of those are bad defenses. The Eagles' defense is best in the NFL and has been for much of the season. They're first in EPA allowed per play against the run, first in EPA allowed per play against the pass. Since week 6, they're allowing 15 points per game. Like, this is a really tough matchup. And I like Philly, -3.5, but interested what you think here.
Yeah, I'm torn on this game. I think, obviously, like, Philly showed us something that they basically have not been able to do all year, except for maybe that game against Cincinnati in like week 8, where they also passed the ball fairly well. I'm not sold on that. As you said, like, they kind of hit the nuts on just like they were grinding out drives like 11. That's not a sustainable way of winning. I mean, like, it's sustainable insofar as like if you do that, you're obviously going to win. But there's a reason why that hasn't happened very often since 2000. Like, that was an outlier game. And I think it, like, it would be foolish to ignore that and say, like, this isn't kind of part of the Eagles' repertoire, so to speak. But, like, they can keep doing it, right? And, like, they've won 10 in a row. Like, this is a team that obviously their defense has been incredible. They can win in multiple ways, even in the passing game, though, as you said, they're still taking sacks. They're still vulnerable to that. And I'd like to see Hurts do this sustainably before I'm ready to jump all over the Eagles train. The part about Washington which has me most intrigued is, like, what to do with, as you said, like, we have Cliff Kingsbury, whose offenses have, like, taken a decline in the second half in basically each season that he's been running an offense. But also coinciding with that this year was Jaden Daniels' rib injury. And again, not a doctor, don't want to prognosticate on injuries, but I do want to look at, like, well, how has the player stylistically changed how he's played? And Jaden Daniels was scrambling, and we chart scrambles not only as plays that cross the line of scrimmage, but anytime you begin the process of scrambling. He was doing so basically every single week between, like, 20 and 25% pre-rib injury. Okay, he hurts his ribs. That number is, like, between, like, 7% and 15%. Okay, he finally gets a bye, gets a couple of weeks. It's a small sample, for sure. But that scramble rate was back to kind of the pre-rib injury levels. And it also coincides with his time to throw. Right, Daniels is very much like a first read, second read scramble type of quarterback when healthy. That he, when not healthy, was like first read, second read. Oh, I don't really know what to do here. I'm just going to get rid of the ball. And in that same time frame where he wasn't scrambling, his time to throw was like anywhere between 2.5 seconds and 2.9 seconds, back to 3.4 last week. That matters twofold. Number one, because I think it's like we're probably going to see Jaden Daniels as a more effective quarterback if he's back to kind of that early season style of play. But that's also precisely the type of trait that can help to mitigate a matchup advantage on the defensive side, right? To think about it in the context of like one play, which obviously doesn't work, but it illustrates the point here. Like the touchdown he threw to Terry McLaurin, where he's dancing, and not the three missed deep touchdowns. That's a different story. Where he's dancing around the pocket, like buying time, scrambling, making a throw. Like when you kind of create like an extra 4 seconds on a play and throw with 6 seconds, throw 6 seconds after snap, like no coverage is going to be able to keep up with your receivers. Like that's what we talk about when a quarterback's creating. So obviously that's like an extreme example of a play, though these are the types of plays which go a long way in determining the outcome of games. Like that's the sort of thing which can, like Philly's coverage has been great. And they also, like in their first matchup between these teams, Terry McLaurin had like one catch. Like that's the sort of thing which can happen when Jaden Daniels is not extending plays, and he wasn't extending plays. That was like, right. I think that was the game which opened everyone's eyes and was like, oh, Jaden Daniels playing hurt. I think it's going to look like a completely different matchup and a completely different game by virtue of Daniels' ability to extend plays. In that, I think there's some value kind of seen in that framework on just general Washington alts of like so much of the market value on the Eagles is by way of their defense, rightfully so. But if Daniels is back, number one, they're probably mispriced because right, there's this question of is Washington really like how do we price Washington's offense? Is it like the early season team? Is it kind of the midseason team or like the last 2 weeks? I'm with you. I don't think the last 2 weeks have that much signal, but what I do think has signal is Daniels' change in style of play. And in that, like, I think there's some value because this Washington offense might actually be as good as they were early in the season and like can win in this matchup against Philly. Is it the thing that I think is most likely to happen? No. Do I think there's like a lot of kind of mass on, if we were to chart this as like a distribution on that outcome occurring? Also, yes. And I think there's some value on the tails, but obviously I see the Eagles side here, right? Like there's a reason they've won 10 in a row. This is a team that has played great defense. They can run the ball. And even last week we're throwing the ball well, and this is not a great Washington defense. And Philly should absolutely have the advantage in the trenches. But in this tail scenario, again, like that's the sort of thing which is pretty fragile. You need to march up and down the field. Philly offense has not been generating a ton of explosive plays. And like you commit an extra two holding calls than usual and you're nuking your drives. Or you're not punching in those drives for touchdowns. You're kicking field goals. Like, it is, that is just a naturally more fragile way of playing offense. Though, as I can see both sides here, but I do think there's a strong case to be made for the Washington Tails.
Yeah, on the Daniel stuff, right? He was scrambling more last week. That's against the Saints defense as man heavy, that has allowed a lot of scrambling yards this year. Right, so there was a matchup angle there. Like, I looked at Daniel's numbers when moved off his spot, kind of by that season split. So weeks 1 to 7, they were the best offense in the league by EPA per play. When he was moved off his spot, 14 for 20, 175 yards, 13 sacks taken, 32 scrambles for 257 yards. Weeks 8 to 15, 10 for 31, 125 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks, 21 sacks taken, 28 scrambles for 196 yards. And you saw him take 8 sacks in that Saints game. Yes, he was creating with his legs. He was also taking sacks in that game. And the Eagles have a good pass rush, and they're second in the NFL in pass rush grade for us. Their pressure numbers are behind that, but like just looking at the grading, they trail only Pittsburgh in terms of team defense pass rush grade for us this season. And like, obviously Washington can win this game. You talked about like Daniels wasn't playing the same way in that first matchup, and Washington was still winning through the first three quarters of that game. Like, they held a one-score lead throughout the first three quarters of that game. I like the Philly side of this, right? I'm kind of buying into this Washington offense has regressed. And, like, if you're just looking at the talent on this Washington offense, yes, Daniels can create when nothing's there. But it's not a talented offense. You have Terry McLaurin. Noah Brown was their wide receiver too. He's out now. So you got De'Ami Brown, Olamide Zaccheaus. Zach Ertz is your starting tight end. He's barely played the last 2 years. He's become part of this offense, but he's not practicing with a concussion right now, right? So maybe you don't even have him. You don't have Austin Eckler. And when you look at the first game between these two teams, the wide receivers only had 28 of the 191 pass receiving yards in the game. It was all Austin Eckler and Zach Ertz. Those were the only two guys above 20 receiving yards in that game. Like, the Eagles cornerbacks and the Eagles secondary in this Vic Fangio defense, just they have an advantage. And I think the Eagles defensive line has an advantage over the Washington offensive line. So really, like, the angle is it doesn't matter, because Daniels is going to make dudes miss and scramble for 10 yards. Or create time and give McLaurin some extra time to get open, right? And I'm just not confident enough in that with the advantage I think that the Eagles have on the offensive side. They didn't play well in that first matchup, but Barkley still had 26 carries for 146 yards. He broke two long touchdowns in the fourth quarter of that game that helped the numbers. But that is probably my primary angle on this game, is Eagles spread and then Barkley. Like, his line is around 98-99. Yes, that's high, but we've seen him, he's averaging 120 yards a game this season. Like, he's getting a lot of workload. He's one of the more efficient running backs in the NFL on a per carry basis, and this is a bad Commanders run defense. They're allowing the most yards per play of any run defense in the NFL this year when you include penalty yardage, 4.5 yards. Barkley is like, it's not the main thing. I think that Barkley's talent in the Eagles' run game against this Commanders defense is the main thing, but he's also chasing that record. Like, he had a bad game against Pittsburgh last week, and he needs to average like 140 yards a game or something to break the single season record. But like, I think that's something he's aware of. I think he said he's aware of it. Like, if he doesn't hit it, whatever. But I think both he and the Eagles would like him to get that record. So I think he's going to get plenty of carries in this game in a winnable matchup against a bad run defense. And I like that we're on different sides of this. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, the Eagles got to get Barkley to stick it to the Giants as an extra kind of Philly special. Yeah. Look, here's what I'll say. I guess my final word on this game: if you forced me to take a spread, I would take the Eagles. I think if I had to talk about my favorite play, it would be the Washington Alts and building through Daniels. And both of those things can still be true.
Yeah. Well said. Moving on, Rams at Jets. Rams are 3-point favorites, 46.5-point total. Very different games last week. The Rams 49ers game on Thursday night did not go at all how I thought it was going to go. The rain was a real problem in that game. The Rams came out with a win, right? So they're still in the mix in the NFC West. And the Jets Jaguars became a big play shootout late in the fourth quarter last week with Devontae Adams. I think it was something like he had the most yards in the final 4 minutes of the game and a really long. He had those two massive catches, ended up with 198 yards. So Rams are 3-point favorites on the road. We've seen the Jets passing offense the last 2 weeks look a little bit better, granted against the Dolphins and against the Jaguars, but it's not like the Rams have the NFL's best coverage unit. So how do you see this one?
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers seems to have found the fountain of youth, I guess. He scrambled on 25% of his plays. Rodgers at this point of his career was just like, time to throw, you know, 2.5 seconds, nothing later. It just like, if you look at his weekly chart of time to throw, it's going to range from like 2.3 to 2.6. Last week, 3.5. He was extending. He ran for, what, 45 yards? Really helping.
I like how fired up he gets after he scrambles.
Oh, so fired up. He's like, you know, proving everyone wrong. Off the Achilles, still got it. Yeah, I think this Jets offense is going to have some success against the Rams, especially like. Also, I don't know why I heard the broadcast footage talking about this, and this is just like an anecdote of like Rodgers watched some old film of himself, and he's like, oh, like this guy used to run, like I got to do that a little more often. This was in their week 14 game against Miami, and then it's actually kind of happened over the last 2 weeks, which is a funny little anecdote. But I think the Jets are going to be able to move the ball on this Rams defense, which pass rush has been pretty good, but especially if Rodgers is more mobile, you'll be able to mitigate that a bit. And as you said, this is not a coverage unit, which has been great. And on the other side of the ball, the Jets defense has been really bad. They developed this reputation of a team that can't stop the run, and I actually think that's been less true over the last 6 weeks. They're one of like the biggest pass fun. DJ Reed here, which I do think is a big injury, but the secondary basically since Robert Saleh was fired has been one of the worst in the NFL. They're bottom five in yards per attempt, DPA, success rate, whatever you want to use to capture the efficiency of the passing game. I mean, Mac Jones just was tearing them apart, which is something. But I think this is a spot where we can see points. Going to be very cold, but I don't think wind is going to be a huge problem here. Both teams, their defenses filter towards or most beatable via the pass, and I don't see why either team's going to be kind of taken out of that. I think they're both going to attack via the air, should have some success. I honestly think this is going to be a great matchup. With a lot of points. I'm not sure if I have a lean on the side here, but I do think they're intriguing kind of SGP builds on each side of this game.
Yeah, on the Jets secondary, the last 2 weeks they've been without one of their outside guys. All right, Sauce missed the Miami game. Reed missed last week's game. Like, I do think that matters because the guys they have behind them who are filling in have not played well, and it looks like they should have both this week. Right? DJ Reed was a full practice participant on Wednesday. Michael Carter's still not practicing in the slot, but Isaiah Oliver's in there and could play. Right, so I tend to agree that like I like what I've seen from the Jets passing offense the last couple weeks. I think they can have success against this Rams defense. And like as 3-point dogs, like I think they're live in this game, right? Especially if you get a slight bump from this Jets pass defense. Yes, the Rams can beat anyone when they're healthy, and they can have those ceiling games. We certainly didn't see it last week in San Francisco, but honestly, I was underrating that San Francisco defense with how healthy they were going into that game, right? I didn't necessarily expect Dre Greenlaw to come back for a lot of the week. He's awesome, right? Having him back obviously matters next to Fred Warner. Having Talanoa Hufanga back the last couple weeks compared to what they had, that matters, right? They're getting healthier in the secondary. They got Charvarius Ward back. So, like, that was a good defense. But I think, yes, the Jets' pass defense has struggled, but when they're healthy, they're still talented. So, like, if I was picking a side on this game, I think I would be on the Jets plus three.
Yeah. No, I don't hate that. I do think even, like, obviously those injuries matter, and that's why I was saying, like, you got to check on DJ Reed's status. But even before, right, when they were getting torn apart by the Colts, I think the game before that was Arizona, where Arizona was thrown all over them. I think both sides are vulnerable. Absolutely with you on the San Francisco front, like getting Nick Bosa and Greenlaw didn't play in the fourth quarter, but like getting these guys back is huge.
That was when the Rams moved the ball in the fourth quarter.
Exactly. But obviously the rain there was confounding all that. But to recap what I'm on, I think it's just the passing games. And I think both of these, we've seen the Jets play this sort of game each of the last 2 weeks of like a lot of passing yards on both sides of the ball. I think that can continue here. I'd be very interested to see on the Blake Corum, Kyren Williams split. It seemed like, and I feel like the two of us have been talking about betting on Corum the last couple of times. I was on him last Thursday night, where it seemed like in the previous weeks, like Corum was actually going to start to eat into Williams' workload, and then Williams was just unstoppable in that game. So I'd be curious to see, and this is a live angle perhaps, of just like, are they going to get back to that kind of 70-30 split, or is it going to go back to the 90-10 Williams? And perhaps there's some value on Corum there. But passing offenses, a lot of different creative ways to build SGPs, especially with how concentrated these targets are for both these teams. Like Jets targets are going to go to Adams and Wilson. Rams targets are going to go to Nacua and Kupp. Can really kind of take advantage of that in the SGP market.
Yeah, you could get a situation, that Dolphins game, like if you had bet 100 yards Adam, 100 yards Wilson, 100 yards Hill, 100 yards Waddle, you would have missed by like 2 yards, I think. So it could be a similar situation this week. And on the Corum front real quick before we move on, like be careful if you're betting it live, because the Rams are doing this thing where they play Corum for like one drive in the first half and you're like, oh, he's going to get carries. And then it's just, nope, he's not playing the rest of the game. So I don't really know what to do with how the Rams are using Blake Corum.
Yeah, the tell, I think, is how well Kyren Williams is running. If Kyren Williams is averaging 2 yards per carry, Blake Corum time. If Kyren Williams is averaging 5 or 6 yards per carry, they're probably going to stick with him.
We'll round things out with Sunday Night Football, Bucks at Cowboys. We were on the Bucks last week. I think we both liked the Panthers last week too. So one and one on that front. And Bucks come in as 3.5 point favorites on the road, 48.5 point total. And I think, like, just looking at this on the surface, I like Tampa Bay again this week. Right? They've been one of the best offenses in the league over the course of the year, regardless of what's been thrown at them. Chris Godwin out, Mike Evans out. They were still able to move the ball when they were both out. Now you have Evans back. They're first in the NFL in average yards per run play. Like, they finally have a run game. Baker Mayfield's playing well. Liam Cohen's going to get a head coaching job. Like, I think people are hesitant to talk about this Bucks offense as one of the best in the league just because it's Baker Mayfield. But like that's how they've played this year. And this is a Cowboys defense that has, yes, they've been better since Micah Parsons came back from a results standpoint, but they've relied heavily on turnovers and sacks. Those could still continue to come but they're bottom half of the league in yards allowed per play. Like, I think Tampa Bay will be able to move the ball. The Bucs are second in terms of team pass protection grade this year. They have a good offensive line that helps mitigate the pressure some. And the Cowboys are down Trevon Diggs again, right? The combination of Diggs and Bland was very short-lived once again. Diggs tore his ACL. So now you're throwing, I believe, Oruwariye back in at the other starting cornerback spot, and he's allowed the second most yards per coverage snap of any cornerback in the NFL this year when he was in the lineup earlier. So you have a clear weakness at corner. Mike Evans can attack that. You have a good run game against a bad run defense. Like, this is a spot where Tampa should put up points.
Yeah, I'm with you there on, and we talked about last week about the Tampa offense generally. Just like they've been moving the ball as well as basically anyone in the NFL. I think kind of in that clear like tier two of offense. The main thing when I think about this game is really like, what does the Dallas offense look like when they're not running for 120 yards? And they've had some kind of cupcake matchups over the last few weeks, but the Tampa run defense is a completely different beast. Basically, since Vita Vea got back, they've got the third best rush EPA in the NFL. Similar yards per carry numbers, and like having Cooper Rush drop back to pass against the Tampa defense, which like we talked about last week and continued last week, is blitzing at 65% at a 65% clip, is just not a recipe for any success here. I mean, Cooper Rush has been bad against the blitz. We have him with like a, you know, 65 PFF grade, right around the likes of Aiden O'Connell, Jameis Winston, Bo Nix, and Justin Fields. This is not a quarterback who's handled pressure, who's handled the blitz well. He's going to be seeing a ton of it. And I think this Dallas offense has not been good from an efficiency perspective with Cooper Rush at quarterback. And the last kind of couple of weeks of success, I don't think are sustainable in this matchup. And he talked about on the Bucs side of things, they have seen the fewest or allowed the least amount of quick pressure. That's by design, right? It's getting rid of the ball quick for Baker Mayfield. And like, that's the entirety of the Dallas defense right now, is basically just like Michael Parsons getting quick pressure. Now, obviously one or two plays can make all the difference, especially if you can force some fumbles there. But Tampa is well designed to stop them. And they've been able to run the ball, which Dallas has struggled with, especially with Bucky Irving, and that offense has gotten more efficient as he's gotten more of the workload, and they've also been able to attack you via the pass. I think this is just like the Bucs offense, I think, is going to have success in this spot. There are little pathways other than just like Michael Parsons having a great game, like an incredible game. And even with that, I think the Bucs offense should be fine. That's really the only kind of angle I can see towards the Dallas defense having some success. And then I'm similar on the Bucs side of things. Just like in obvious passing situations, Cooper Rush, not a good quarterback. Let's not forget who Dallas is. It's a completely different beast playing Carolina. I did actually end up on Sunday morning. I was just kind of thinking through that game a bit more, and I'm like, okay, I've had a lot of love for Carolina. Like, what's the counter to it? And I'm like, the defense is still pretty bad, and they've been playing better, but like, we have a full season of data that would suggest that this is not a great team. I ended up on some Cooper Rush builds, which came nice. Pretty close, but alas, it's a reminder of like, to use the full season's worth of data, and the full season's worth of data is going to suggest that this is not a good Cowboys offense, and they do not match up well with Tampa Bay, given how reliant Dallas has been in recent weeks on the run, and how good Tampa's been at stopping that.
Yeah, too many short fields for your Cooper Rush.
Yep.
Basically why Dallas offense, in large part, had the success they did. They did drive the ball down the field, and CeeDee Lamb had a big game. Cooper Rush made some nice throws. But, like, in general, that game was Micah Parsons and the pass rush had Bryce Young in absolute hell for the entirety of that game. Right, and Dallas was able to capitalize. But I think we have a large sample. Like, Cooper Rush's numbers under pressure this year, like, it just his passing line looks pretty good. I'm not buying that sustaining. And I don't think, to your point, that the run game is going to be the same kind of crutch that it's been the last couple weeks, where you have matchups against the Giants and the Panthers and the Bengals. Like, this is a Bucs defense that if Todd Bowles does anything, he wants to take away the run. And that's been his thing throughout his career. And the Bucs run defense over the last couple weeks especially has been great against the run. So it's going to – if Tampa Bay is putting up points and Dallas is playing from a deficit and Rush has to drop back and they can't run the ball, like, it has blowout potential for sure. And blowouts aren't exciting in prime time, so it becomes a little bit more exciting if you bet on it. So hopefully
that's right. Comes through. And that's what we'll be doing. At least I will.
That's all we got this week. Any closing thoughts on other things we didn't hit that you like?
I find this to be a kind of ugly week.
It is.
Like, I have no interest in betting like Bears, Lions, Jaguars, Raiders. I think San Francisco, Miami might have some scoring potential. Like, the total on that game is very low, 44.5. And like, yeah, we talked about the Niners defense being better, but these are still kind of two quality offenses, and it's not like the Niners defense is elite, I think, by any stretch. We'll see about the health status of guys like Jalen Waddle. But no, I it does not seem like a board that I'm going to be attacking too heavily outside of the games we discussed.
I'm interested to see where Penix's line comes out. I haven't seen it yet, but that matchup against New York, like, there is DTR is the opposite of Penix in my estimation. It's like a backup coming in with a low line. Like, I have no interest in betting in DTR at all against a bad defense. But like, Penix, it's an unknown. They've got some weapons. Bad Giants defense. Like, yes, they're probably going to be super run heavy, but could have some interest there.
Yeah.
That's all we got this week. We will be back next week on the 26th, Christmas week, Hanukkah week. Not going to kill our schedule. We're going to be back with you Thursday morning, talk about week 17. Until then, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.